So we were talking about this Ayesha Curry stuff in Houston, where she's going to open up a new restaurant in Houston, and she's Steph Curry's wife. And the Yelp reviews are already coming in from Rockets fans who are sour because Steph has owned them for years and just crushing the reputation of the restaurant before it even opens up. And we posed the question, is there any villain in Toronto sports history that could open up a restaurant here in Toronto that would lead to people doing the same thing? And someone brought up Aki's Burgers. Poor Aki Berg.
He did nothing wrong.
Well, he was a plug, but...
Aki's Burgers. I'm saying, like, he didn't skate around the ice with his middle finger up or anything. Just played hard and didn't...
And now he's a finished trainer, which is a great transition.
He's a trainer for TPS, I believe.
And we also threw out the idea of Vince Carter opening up a restaurant here in Toronto. Yes. I still think it would get bad Yelp reviews. 10 years 50-50. Ago, it would have never happened. But we've got an expert on this kind of conversation in studio. Our buddy Josh Lewenberg, Raptors reporter. What's happening, Josh?
Not much, guys. Yeah, I think it would be 50-50 for the Vince Carter. How about the Andrea Bargnani Spaghetti Factory, sponsored by Primo Pasta?
Good question. He always had those Primo Pasta commercials going.
Great commercials.
Couldn't speak English. He'd just be sitting there eating Primo Pasta.
Hito Turkoglu.
Turkoglu, I think, maybe more hated.
What about Paul Pierce? Toronto villain.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, he's always taking shots at them, right? And did play in the division forever. And then
what
was
his comment
Brooklyn,
after the series? It was like
they didn't have it. Yeah. The it factor.
Yeah. Was that when he was in Washington or Brooklyn?
Brooklyn.
It was Washington, I think.
But it was after the sweep, I think, right? Against Washington.
It was before the series against Washington where they got swept.
But wasn't, I mean, didn't Chris Bosh basically say that on our show?
Yeah,
that
he did.
The Raptors didn't have it.
It's like, all true. It just pisses people off.
Well, they got swept in that series where they didn't have it, and they've been swept twice since, so they probably don't have it.
They haven't found it.
They got to find it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I mean, this is a big offseason, needless to say. The draft is tomorrow night. They don't have a pick in the draft. They don't have really any flexibility in terms of the cap. Fred VanVleet needs a new contract, which means they probably have to go into the luxury if they want to sign him.
For the first time in franchise history.
So, I mean, where's your head at going into the next 2 or 3 weeks?
It is a big offseason, but it seems sort of weird to say that because they're all big offseasons. We said that last offseason as well. But what makes this so interesting to me is last year was a crossroads for them, right? Lowry was a free agent. Ibaka was a free agent. They had just come off of that disappointing playoff exit. And the sense that I got then, the sense that I still get now, is if Lowry would have left, they were strongly considering pulling the plug and taking a significant step back, which probably would have included a DeMar DeRozan trade, and all of a sudden you're starting from scratch again and building around young players. In the end, the market for Lowry dries up and they end up recommitting to this core. So that was a crossroads. That doesn't seem to be the case this time around. Publicly and privately, Raptors management is insisting that they don't intend to rebuild, they don't intend to take a significant step back in the short term. So this is more of a roadblock than anything else. They want to win. They want to get better. But to your point, Brian, they've got an expensive core that they're committed to, and they've got limited resources to add around that core. So how do they do it?
Well, I also think the LeBron story is hanging over the whole offseason in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
I mean, over the whole NBA. But him leaving the East allows them to probably do nothing and still win the offseason in a weird way. You know, Boston would spin it as a win. Philly would spin it as a win. Cleveland, a huge loss. But if you get rid of LeBron, it changes everything in the Eastern Conference. And I think that's probably the best thing that can happen for Masai, if we're being realistic. I mean, I don't think they're in on Kawhi Leonard. Like, I don't picture that. I think they should be. I don't care if he wants to go to L.A. He's got 2 years left on his deal.
Well, one, he can opt out after the one.
But I would do whatever I could to acquire a guy like Kawhi Leonard, especially if LeBron goes to the West. You bring in Kawhi Leonard into this team, even if it is only for a year, if you can manage that, and I don't know how they would go about it. I mean, it would cost them kids and maybe one of their star players, but
that
changes
everything.
Is that
kind of talk just fantasy talk? Like, can they ever land a big fish like that here?
No, I mean, the Kawhi thing is really interesting to me because, I mean, there's a dilemma here that's similar to the Paul George dilemma a year ago. It's a similar situation, right? You've got an all-star who's entering, presumably, the final year of his contract. So the question is, if you're a team that's interested, how much are you willing to give up for a guy that could walk in a year? And with Kawhi, there's even more question marks than with Paul George because of the injury thing, and maybe there's a question about the mental state coming off of whatever this bizarre situation was in San Antonio this year. But I think what happened last year is OKC set a very interesting precedent. They took the risk, and they said, okay, well, we've got a year now to convince this guy, Paul George, to stay. Indiana set an interesting precedent by saying, okay, well, you want to go to the Lakers? Great. That's not our best offer. We're not going to do it. We're going to trade you here. And then what the Lakers did last year, what they didn't do, could change things this time around also, because the Lakers, I think, looked at what the situation was, said, okay, we can probably get this guy in a year anyways.
Right.
Nobody else is going to trade for him if they know he's coming here. We can lowball Indiana, probably get away with it. And in the end, that probably cost them. They didn't get Paul George last year. They might not get him this year. It sounds like he might stay in OKC. So maybe the Lakers are more motivated to pony up and to pay whatever price it is that San Antonio will be asking for. So I don't know. The Kawhi Leonard situation is really interesting. If the Raptors or anyone want to get involved, I don't see that coming to a head anytime soon. Pop is not the type of guy to overreact to something and act quickly. That's going to take some time. And listen, I mean, if anyone is going to put their foot down and say, we're not going to honor your trade request, and we're certainly not going to facilitate the creation of another super team, it's probably Pop.
Well, I think the NBA needs someone to do that at some point. The power swing in favor of the players has been so overwhelming.
Led by LeBron.
Led by LeBron. You know, and listen, I'm not pro-owner. When in doubt, I'm pro-player. But I still think you got to consider the fans of these respective cities. And it's gotten to a point where in the NBA, contracts don't matter that much, because you look at what Kyrie Irving did last year. He's like, I want out. And they're like, okay, I guess we have to trade you. He got everything right. He wanted. Goes to Boston, quality team. He's probably going to get re-upped there. If he wants to stay, maybe he leaves in 2 years. There's already rumors he's going to want to play with the Knicks in 2 years. But at some point, someone in the NBA, and I do think it would be a guy like Popovich, clearly, has to say, sorry, if you want to walk when you opt out, you're a free agent. Like, go ahead. But we're not trading you simply because you want out. So at some point, it's got to stop. Don't you think?
Right. Don't you think he, after what happened last, he would just sit out again?
Well, he might, but that's fine. Then you've got a whole different scenario. You've got a breach of contract. You've got lawsuits on your hands. I mean, at some point, if Kawhi Leonard just decides, I'm never playing for you again, and stays home,
right,
then I honestly don't know how that would play out with the PA.
It gets to a point where the team, they ultimately have to move them, because it's just.
But they should move them on their terms.
Yeah,
that's they
and their best offer, exactly. Not just because he doesn't have a no trade clause. He can't force his way to the Lakers.
Great, you want to go to the Lakers? Exactly. Sorry, not happening.
That's you can't. The player has rights, but the organization has to do what's best for them, not just the player. And if the player doesn't want to be there, fine. On our timetable, we will move you for the best offer that we can get. And it doesn't have to be Organization X. It's got to go somewhere.
Right. We've never seen this before in the NBA, I don't think. Obviously, LeBron set an interesting precedent for players controlling their destiny by not only going where he wanted and leaving Cleveland the first time, but ultimately designing that super team that he went to. But now it's gone a step further, right? Because these players are dictating their destiny before they're even free agents. Kawhi's doing it a year before. Paul George did it a year before.
Kyrie
did it a year before.
Melo did it back in the day.
It used to be you were a free agent. You kept it pretty quiet up until that moment. Tracy McGrady, Chris Bosh here locally in Toronto. And then you make your decision. And sometimes maybe this is better for the franchise, because now you have an opportunity to do something and to get something for that player before they ultimately leave. But it's an interesting shift in sort of the NBA economy or NBA trade dynamics, player dynamics that we've never seen before.
Josh Leuenberger, Raptors reporter in studio. So what do you make of these rumors and reports that Masai wants to not only get into the draft tomorrow night, he doesn't even have a pick, the Raptors don't have a first or second rounder, but wants to move into the top 10 and potentially is targeting Gilgeous Alexander out of Kentucky.
Now, as you guys know, if there's information that's out there at this time of the year, it's out there for a reason. Right. Somebody's leaking it and they have something to gain from it. So if we're looking at this specific rumor, the Raptors aren't leaking that. They're airtight at this time of the year, and they have nothing to gain from it. I can certainly see another team, if Masai's been talking to them, trying to get a pick, saying, Masai's been talking to us, they're trying to get a pick. But in that scenario, Masai's not going to them and saying, this is the player we'd want to draft. Yeah, so
you have to be an idiot to do that.
It's not coming from another team. My best guess would be it's coming from the agent, maybe trying to drum up some interest in his client using the Canadian angle. And by the way, his client, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander hasn't been working out for any teams, so there would be an obvious incentive to be drumming up some interest here by stirring it up.
Like, why would a potential top 10 pick not be working out for teams?
It, generally, when that's happened before, it's because a team has promised to take him, and some people might raise an eyebrow here and say, well, could it be the Raptors? But the Raptors don't have a pick.
They don't have a pick.
There's no guarantee they're going to get in there. So if you're this kid, you're not going to stop working out for teams because a team that might be able to acquire a pick says they like you. So I don't know.
That sounds like strange advice. I mean, it's one thing if you're DeAndre Ayton and you're like, I'm going first and I feel like I am, fine. Work out for Phoenix and nobody else. Right. Maybe if you're another guy like who's expected to go in the top three or five of the draft, but Gilgeous-Alexander is not expected to be a top five pick.
I don't think I'd work out for anybody. I would be afraid of it hurting my status. Like,
yes.
I have a bad word. I wouldn't do it.
Absolutely. His stock has been rising. And
without working out,
Well, going into this draft process, his stock was rising because, and this is interesting, a Canadian prospect could be a lottery pick. In the past, Jamal Murray, how much do we talk about and hear about Jamal Murray? We're already talking about R.J. Barrett. Who's talking about Shea Gilgeous-Alexander?
He's gone completely under the radar until this weekend. Until the Raptors report.
But his stock is climbing, and as much as I like his game, and I do, his game isn't necessarily one that translates well to workouts. He's not a great shooter, and that's what I mean. Workouts, you're taking a lot of shots. You're playing one versus oh. He's a guy that in a team context, like a DeLon Wright, he's long, he's rangy, he's a good defensive player. He's got intriguing measurables, but I don't know that he'd excel in a workout environment. So I agree with I think if anything, the workouts would hurt him.
Starts clanking it around.
It's brick after brick. He goes Houston in game 7.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I also wonder if it's you're hiding an injury. Like that, this time of year,
maybe.
That's happening all the time. We're seeing that with Michael Porter. Like no one knows what's up with him. You see it with a lot of the bigs. And what's interesting about this, where the NBA is going, I mean, it's moving towards the three-point line. It's moving towards, you know, smaller players basically being in the lineup 1 through 5. Yet, the majority of the top five that is expected to go are bigs.
Yeah, young bigs.
Right. Like 7-foot bigs, like conventional centers. Like Ayton can shoot threes, but this guy's not, I don't see it being a big part of his game, and he's probably going to go first overall.
It's interesting because even after this shift that we've seen over the years in positional versatility and small ball and all of that, there's still that intrigue in the physical freak. Everyone wants to find the next unicorn. Everyone wants to find the next Giannis or Anthony Davis or any of these guys, really. So much so that we're seeing Luka Doncic, an exceptionally talented player that seems like not only has a high upside, but might be the safest player up top. He's falling because he's not the sexy pick,
he's
presumably.
Not a unicorn.
Because
he's not
a unicorn.
Singers. Right. Yeah. Which I think is silly. I mean, the way that he plays. He's a guard. He's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. I mean, I don't know. But it'll be interesting tomorrow night. As for free agency and the Raptors, what do you see happening here with, like, Van Fleet? That's about it. I mean, really, in terms of the money they have to spend here, what do you see going on with the Raptors?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they want to keep Van Vliet, and that might be one of the reasons why I'm hearing Norman Powell's name out there in terms of somebody that they're looking to move, maybe just to clear out some of that salary in order to sign Van Vliet. They've got Van Vliet's bird rights, so they can go over the cap and into the tax. They're already over the cap and already into the tax in order to sign him, but moving Powell, if they can do it, not easy. If they can do it,
happening.
They can do it. Maybe it gives them a little bit more wiggle room. So that's something to keep an eye on. But I mean, a wild card in all of this is the trade exceptions that the Raptors got last year for Damari Carroll and Corey Joseph. The big one is about $12 million. They can't be combined and they can't be used in a package with other players. But basically what it does is it allows them to absorb money in a trade. So if they decide we're okay with paying the tax, we'll go deep into the tax, we want to add a piece, that might be their only way of doing it. It's essentially like signing a free agent. And maybe it allows them to take part in all of this LeBron craziness indirectly, where teams, maybe a Houston, teams that need to clear out good, useful pieces in order to sign LeBron,
Raptors could get in on that.
They can absorb a salary worth upwards of $12 million. So that, I mean, I'm not sure that it's likely, because ultimately they'd still have to pay the tax on that guy and they'd be going deep into the tax to do it. But if it's somebody they like enough.
Well, I would hope so. MLSC's got all the money in the world.
Maybe they should keep their eye on that 12-year-old, 6'10" kid out of Montreal. You heard about this?
Can he rebound?
I don't
know.
Can
he rebound?
Man,
he doesn't have to.
He just stand there. 6'10", and he's 12 years old.
Crushing people.
Like, I keep reading about it, and apparently he caught the eyes of, like, Embiid and some other players, like, tweeted at him.
Yeah. The NBA players are paying attention.
Masai's already in a gym somewhere watching this guy. He's hiding behind a newspaper with a baseball cap on.
Start to, you know, getting in that ear as quickly as possible.
It's the only move.
Well, we'll see, man. It's going to be a fun couple of weeks. And, you know, another thing to consider from MLSE's standpoint in terms of them paying the luxury tax, they're saving money on the coach now, too. Like, Nurse is getting paid, what, $3 million? Casey was making $6.5 million, I think.
Yeah, double that.
So, you know, it's minor, but it's still, it should be calculated in terms of the whole picture here. And I'd like to believe, because they always say it, you know, they always say it, if it's the right move or it's the right time, we're willing to go into the luxury. Well, coming off 59 wins, LeBron potentially going to the Western Conference, now is the right time.
And they were setting themselves up last summer with everything they did, the Lowry contract, Ibaka, to pay the tax this year. That seemed to be their intention. They've always said, we'll pay it in the right circumstance. Now, if they had lived up to expectations, even taking Cleveland to six or seven game, whatever, they didn't even have to win that series. I think it's a no-brainer you pay the tax. Now, if you're Masai, and certainly if you're MLSE, maybe you think twice just because there is that question of whether or not this team is truly good enough. But as I said, they're telling us publicly and privately, they're not rebuilding, they're not taking a step back. If you're not taking a step back, you probably shouldn't be opting for status quo. You want to take a step forward, and if you're taking a step forward,
it's going to cost you some money.
You've got to pay for it.
That's the way it goes. He is Josh Leuenberger, a Raptors reporter for TSN. We appreciate it, buddy. Thanks for coming up here. Good seeing you.
Anytime, boys. Happy to do it.
There he is. Josh Leuenberger up here in studio, fighting traffic to get up here.
Battled.
Grinder. Grit grinder.